The next matter on for oral argument this morning is State of Minnesota versus Jude Lagu. Correct me if I'm mispronouncing the name as you engage in your arguments. Go ahead and relax and get situated. Counsel, each of you will have 15 minutes to present your argument with an additional 5 minutes for appellant's counsel if you'd like to use that time for rebuttal. Please state your name as you commence each leg of your argument, and I should indicate to you that there's a button on the podium and the lectern right in front, and you can raise or lower the platform to your convenience to match your height. Whenever you're ready to proceed, to counsel for appellant, you may.
Thank you, Your Honor.
We had two very tall lawyers right before you, so.
I was noticing that on the video monitors, Your Honor. Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Isabel McClure, and I represent appellant Jude Jerome Lagu. This case is about a warrantless search of appellant's closed curtilage in violation of his Fourth Amendment rights. There are three buildable steps that I will take the court through to arrive at this ultimate conclusion. First, the area where appellant was located on his property was the curtilage of his private property and therefore presumptively protected under the Fourth Amendment. Second, law enforcement did not have an implied license to be on appellant's property and thus were bound by the warrant requirement of the Fourth Amendment. And finally, because law enforcement searched the curtilage of appellant's home with no implied license and no warrant, they were bound by a warrant requirement. There is no valid warrant requirement exception that applies here, and thus the search violated appellant's constitutional rights.
Before you...
What was the search?
Yes, Your Honor. Under Florida v. Jardines, which is 569 U.S. 1, the U.S. Supreme Court held that physical intrusion onto the curtilage of an appellant's property, that alone is enough to constitute a search under the Fourth Amendment. So I will concede, Your Honor, that if the court finds that this curtilage area was impliedly open to the public, then, of course, respondents' plain sight exception arguments would hold. However, the argument today is that this was not an impliedly open curtilage, that there was a reasonable expectation of privacy for where appellant was located, so simply being there is enough to constitute a search under the Jardines standard.
Counsel, let me ask you this. We issued an order last week directing both parties to be prepared to discuss the issue of whether the interesting issues you presented have been preserved for appeal. And we know our district courts are courts of record. And, you know, as a former appellate lawyer, we used to have a saying, if it's not in the record, it didn't happen. Here the record indicates that your client pled guilty, which would typically waive any issues for appeal, such as the one you're raising here. Can you help us understand the record and whether, in fact, your client did not appeal or did not plead guilty?
Certainly, Your Honor. And I did submit a transcript of the plea and the plea hearing. Just this morning, I've not gotten confirmation that it was accepted by the clerk. Mr. Lagu did maintain his innocence. It wasn't really correct to call it a plea. This was entered pursuant to Minnesota Rule of Criminal Procedure 2601. He maintained his innocence. However, he stipulated to the facts that were before the court, and he stipulated that the facts would be sufficient to find him guilty.
Okay. That answers my question. I know you have a lot of other ground to cover. I want to ask you, because I don't see it in your briefs, it doesn't appear to me that you are arguing that any of the district court's findings of fact are clearly erroneous.
That's correct, Your Honor. The facts were stipulated to, and appellant was advised at that plea hearing, and this is in the transcript, that the only issue he has preserved for appeal is that violation of his Fourth Amendment rights.
I'm sorry, I'm asking you about the findings of fact within the suppression order itself. I've not seen that you're challenging any of those findings as clearly erroneous. I just want to make sure that's true.
That's correct, Your Honor. I believe this case rises and falls on the question of whether the curtilage was impliedly open to the public. I think that's the biggest differentiation between appellant's position and what was in the district court's order, and that's a conclusion of law.
Can you discuss more thoroughly the fact that the district court found that the deputy did not see the no trespassing sign?
Well, Your Honor, I...
As it regards the implied license argument.
Yes, Your Honor. So when we're looking at the Dunn factors, just for establishing what's curtilage, what's a reasonable expectation of privacy...
Does anybody dispute here that the driveway was curtilage?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. I
think, could we focus on why the driveway was not impliedly open to the public?
Yes, Your Honor, and I think that the Dunn factors are, of course, to determine what is curtilage, but I think that fourth factor of the steps taken by the property owner to protect the public, that does lead into the implied scope, because this implied license question from Jardines focuses on the habits of the country, whether a reasonable person would feel they had the right to enter the property for that reason. The deputy not seeing either the no trespassing sign or the sign saying, you know, smile, you're on camera, the video surveillance notice. Here, I think it's more important the steps that appellant actually took to put those signs up, because we're looking not just at what did this deputy see, but what would a reasonable member of the public see. And we're not talking, again, about necessarily a suburban neighborhood where all driveways are open. Everyone can see clear across them. People turn around in neighbors' driveways. Kids run across the lawn. We're talking about a rural area, someone who has intentionally built a home down a unpaved road behind a large enclosure of trees.
Appellant, it's on 7th Street Northwest. I mean, that to me, that's a pretty important fact that the district court found. The parties keep talking about this as a driveway. You know, I'm looking at Exhibit 3 that I think you submitted at trial, and this is 7th Street Northwest that runs west of your client's property, east of your client's property. It's a thoroughfare Blue Jay Avenue intersects with, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
And it's also correct that the two signs, the no trespass sign and the video recording sign, are not adjacent to the garage and the yard area where the deputies encountered your client?
No, they precede that. That would be correct, that the deputies, had they seen it, they would have seen it before they arrived at the garage or the home.
Were the signs on 7th or the driveway coming off of 7th or at the point where the driveway began?
So appellant testified that he placed those signs, and I believe that the property maps indicate that those are between where 7th Street ends and the beginning of his driveway begins.
I think between.
I believe they were on his right where his property begins.
So the no trespassing sign was not on the dirt road, 7th. It was on this drive between the dirt road and where your client was found.
Yes, Your Honor. I think some of the confusion here is there really isn't that clear demarcation between where the street ends and where his driveway begins. Appellant's position, again, is this reasonable expectation of privacy. What is, and obviously if it is not his property, he doesn't have that. Where he was found was, in fact, his property. I don't think that's up for any dispute. His privacy rights are attached there. The question is, where is it reasonable for him to believe, or where would it be reasonable for the public to think they could go no further?
Well, tell us where the no trespassing sign, help me to understand where exactly the no trespassing sign was that the deputy did not see.
That was on appellant's property as the 7th, and it's hard to call it a driveway because I do agree with the court, we really are looking at 7th Street, which he's using as a driveway to some degree, but it's where his property.
So when you talk about driveway, just so we're clear, the dirt road that is 7th Street is, the driveway is comprised of part of that.
That's correct, Your Honor, and there's no argument that
separate leg that goes off of this 7th Street towards where your client was.
7th Street kind of bleeds into where he was, but at a certain point, the public roadway ends.
But there's no separate driveway is what I'm trying to get at.
No.
There's no turn off of 7th into a driveway. 7th just flows right into his driveway, and I guess you would just say, well, where's the property line? What's his? What belongs to?
Yes, and
so is Seventh shared then? Is this a like an easement effectively that's shared by other rural properties?
I don't believe there's a formal easement, Your Honor. I'm not sure of that.
There's a formal easement or not. I'm trying to get a sense of how 7th Avenue or 7th Street is used, how it's the relationship to other properties.
There are other properties along 7th, but the area we're talking about where the no trespass signs are and the surveillances, that is just to get to Mr. Legu's property.
Can I ask you a different question? That is the area where your client was asleep in the car.
Yes.
When the first deputy appeared and when the second one came up. That was the area, grassy area that led up to the door to the house, right?
Correct.
I mean, isn't that the sort of place that an Amazon delivery driver would pull into if they were making a delivery, or a census taker would enter if they were going to come and contact your client to get information?
Yes, Your Honor. Here, the argument is that because law enforcement was entering that curtilage to perform a search, they are not under that same implied license. They're not under that same scope of people who would be invited to the house, say an Amazon delivery driver, presumptively.
But you were talking about expectations of privacy a minute ago. So why wouldn't the officer located in an area where an Amazon delivery driver be outside of your client's expectation of privacy?
Why would the officer not be outside?
Or why is the officer not in an area where your client had no reason to expect privacy if the officer was in an area where an Amazon delivery driver would access the property?
So, Your Honor, I think what's unique about appellant's property here is if there's an Amazon delivery driver, presumptively appellant has given an express invitation, and that was also testimony and within the briefs regarding if a fire or ambulance service came, that he has expressly said, I need this service at my home. I need my package delivered. I need firefighters to come put something out. I need ambulance to arrive. When police are entering with no invitation and they're entering to conduct a search, appellant's position is based on how his property is located. Someone just coming up, wandering through the woods up to appellant's property, given the distance, the enclosure of trees, which Jude has said is sufficient to constitute this kind of natural barrier protecting appellant's home and giving him that reasonable expectation of privacy, that in order
to say barrier, this barrier is before, I'm just trying to get a sense of the lay of the land. From 7th Street, between 7th Street and where the officer encountered your client, was this barrier present there, or is it further back?
The barrier I'm referring to, Your Honor, is that tree line. There's no man-made.
Right, but I'm asking where the tree line is. This barrier, this visual barrier of trees between 7th Street and where your client was encountered, or is it further back on 7th Street where the no trespassing sign was?
The tree line extends essentially to this open grassy area. So between 7th Street and where the client is found, there is a tree line, and it opens up around the home where he was found and some of his other vehicles were parked.
Where was the no trespass sign in relation to the tree line?
I believe it was within the tree line.
Within the tree line?
Well, on the road, it was where the trees the trees were still there where it was. I think it was estimated about 0.25 to 0.5 miles.
You keep referring to a reasonable expectation of privacy, but isn't there another property rights basis for finding a Fourth Amendment violation that's discussed in Jones and Jardines? Isn't that essentially what you're arguing? You're arguing for relief under the Fourth Amendment because the Fourth Amendment was traditionally based on property rights and the theory that no one comes onto my property unless I approve it. So if I take steps to make it clear that you can't come onto my property, no one comes in. That's not the reasonable expectation of privacy theory that was set forth in Katz. Katz is a very different analysis. And Jardines and Jones post Katz, at least Jardine, said, we didn't do away with property rights analysis of Fourth Amendment claims. And if the government trespasses to obtain information, that could be a Fourth Amendment violation.
That's correct, Your Honor. And that brings me back to that original Jardine standard, that the search here is more than an invasion of the reasonable expectation of privacy. It's intrusion.
Well, Jardine's was expressly not based on reasonable expectation of privacy. The court was very clear, at least the writing justice, in saying cats didn't become the only standard for determining whether there is a basis for a Fourth Amendment claim. And we don't need to decide whether or not cats applies here, because we still have historical Fourth Amendment law saying that if the police trespass to obtain information, that's a Fourth Amendment violation.
Correct, Your Honor. And that's the Jardine standard that's within the brief, and that's the Jardine standard I'm asking the court to apply, that physical intrusion onto the curtilage in this case.
Not the reasonable expectation of privacy standard.
Correct, Your Honor. And I believe I derailed myself a little bit with that. But the question is, was this curtilage impliedly open? If so, did the police exceed the scope? An appellant would concede, if this court finds that curtilage was impliedly open to the public, he was right there in his vehicle. There's no, I don't believe, especially under the State v. CREA standard, that there's any argument that they exceeded the scope when they saw him asleep in the vehicle.
And I tend to agree with you that this case probably rises and falls on whether or not his curtilage was impliedly open, as it normally is, or whether he did enough to make it clear that it was not open.
Yes, Your Honor, and that is
it. So what did he do to make it clear that it's not open to the public?
Well, I think first, Your Honor, is looking at the specific layout. This is not a case where we're looking at a suburban neighborhood with houses closely together where you can see clear across driveways, where there are delivery drivers, neighbors walking up and down people's houses. This is an appellant who
has... How do we know that? Is that in the record? I think the record is pretty sparse, to be honest with you, about what 7th Street Northwest is all about and who travels on it.
I see my time has expired. May I answer your question,
Certainly.
Your Honor? There are the overhead aerial pictures depicting that this is a more rural area. I agree with Your Honor. There's not a lot of clarity between where 7th Street ends and the driveway begins, but we do see at the end of the day someone who has...
I'm confused now. I thought you said there was no extension from 7th Street towards where your client was, and so the driveway was in fact just simply some segment of 7th Street. There's no separate avenue.
It does not appear separate, but at a certain point, the public roadway, as is owned by whatever municipality owns it, and his private property begins. I don't think that's a clear demarcation necessarily, but we're looking at, again, this home built back in a clearing surrounded by trees with a no trespassing and video surveillance sign. It's appellant's position that any reasonable person, again, under that Jardine standard, would not feel they had the right to walk into appellant's private space up to his door or onto the area where he was found.
Thank you. You will have 15 minutes of, or five Thank minutes you. Of time for rebuttal. Counsel for respondent.
Your Honors, may it please the court, Kelly Small, Assistant Carver County Attorney, respondent today. Briefly, I would reply to the judge's order from last week. The judge did find appellant guilty. There was no guilty plea, so I do believe this issue is dispositive and before the court today.
But you did it as a stipulated fact trial rather than as submission to the state's case. I don't know that it matters except the number of issues, but I'm just trying to get a sense of what actually happened.
We agreed based on the facts of the complaint and stipulated to that, and the judge found appellant guilty of counts 1 and 3 based upon our stipulation to those facts.
The facts in the complaint?
Correct.
Okay.
And the transcript was submitted this morning and might clear some of that up as well. A sole no trespassing sign posted halfway down a public road does not revoke the public and law enforcement's implied license to approach a home.
Do we know that I see from the pictures we've got a telephone pole with a not just kind of stapled black and orange, what you see on hunting land, but an actual, looks to be sort of a metal white sign, private property, no trespassing. Do we know that that sign was placed along the portion of this dirt road that's West 7th, or was it placed along the portion of the dirt road which is on appellant's property?
The record isn't clear about where the boundary for the home lies.
Do you agree that in terms of this long dirt road going from, it looks like,
Blue Jay
down to appellant's home, at some point that dirt road stops belonging to the government and belongs to him?
Correct.
Okay, so it's not as if no part of that dirt road is his property.
Correct.
But we don't know where the sign was in relation to his property line along that dirt road.
Correct, although when you watch Deputy Klukas' squad video and you see him turn from Blue Jay, it takes less than 30 seconds for him, traveling less than 30 miles an hour, to get from Blue Jay Road to appellant's residence and his driveway within that residence. The tree is several seconds, or the public utility post where this single sign is posted, is several seconds prior to the tree overhang and the entrance into the driveway area of appellant's home.
Now, when you say driveway area, are you talking about turning off the dirt road onto a cement driveway, or are you just saying that, when you say driveway area, I want to be clear, are we talking about his property line?
Yes.
Okay.
And I refer to the dirt road as West or 7th Street Northwest in Mayor Carver County. There is a driveway area on appellant's residence. There's a, a paved curtain and apron, and there's the attached garage, and then there's a grassy area with several vehicles, and that's where appellant's located eventually. So there is a driveway, but this is, a public road. It's a dirt road, and it essentially dead ends at appellant's property.
Where's the relationship between the no trespassing sign and this
video?
The driveway that you're talking about that deviates from the dirt road.
So it's very, I encourage the court, and I know you will, watch the squad video. It's an open field and a utility pole where this sign is posted. It's several seconds, and then on the right hand of the road, as you're seeing some tree coverage, there's the video surveillance sign. And then a few seconds later, you're really within appellant's curtilage. The state concedes that where he's located, it's a hard argument to make that he's not in his curtilage at that point, asleep in his car.
What's the state's position on whether this, I know the record doesn't tell us whether this sign is posted within his property line or before his property line. As you've described it, is it pretty clear that the sign is kind of right there by the trees, and then you go past the trees and there's his house?
No. There's several seconds on the squad video between the sign and this tree hedge. The state contends that that's outside of appellant's property. It's not clear on the record. However, when you watch...
Do we know where the property line is? I mean, are we sure that the tree line represents the property line?
We're not.
So we don't know. It could be that the sign is right on the property line, or it's before or after. There's nothing in the record to tell us either way.
Well, it could be. The analysis would change. I mean, it would be definitely an open field. I think there's not a reasonable expectation of privacy at this utility pole where the sign is tacked.
Assume we're not talking about reasonable expectations of privacy, but assume we're talking about sort of the Jardine property approach, protection of property. Government can't go on your property if it doesn't have a license to go onto it.
I would argue, and the state's position is, this is impliedly open. A single sign cannot revoke the public law enforcement's right under Jardine to approach this residence. The court needs to look at whether
Could you repeat that? A single sign.
No trespass sign is not, it's too ambiguous. It's not explicit. It's not unmistakable to revoke that Jardine's right to approach and do a knock and talk. I mean, Deputy Klukas.
Jardine's right. Jardine's is the case that says you can't go onto people's property.
Well, Jardine's allows, I mean, it stands for if you're within your implied license and you can approach
Understood.
A front door and knock, that's allowed.
Impliedly open.
Right.
But is it impliedly open if there's a no trespassing sign?
Without more, yes, would be the state's position.
Well, does the state have a case that supports that position?
Not within this jurisdiction. I mean, courts overwhelmingly across the country and several that I list in my brief have held that a sole sign cannot reasonably be interpreted to exclude normal, legitimate inquiries, mail carriers, census takers, neighbors, friends, utility workers, when they restrict their movements to the areas of one's property normally used to approach a home. And so here, to hold that this single sign categorically prohibits anyone from an approach is just not logical. I mean, if that's sufficient, how would we ever...
The list you have is, why doesn't it prohibit uninvited guests? I mean, a mail carrier, you want your mail every day. I mean, a lot of the things, friends, neighbors. But if you're talking about someone I don't know, I've not invited the person, I don't want the person to come up to my front door, I put up a sign that says private property, no trespassing, how do we reason that that sign is insufficient to communicate that my driveway is not open to you? You're not welcome to drive down it.
It's the state's position that that's not sufficient enough. It's not loud enough. It's not open enough. I mean, this is an unobstructed road. There's no gate, whether opened or closed. There's no fence. There's no guard dogs. There's not all kinds of signs on the...
What if you can't afford a gate?
Would your argument be different if this no trespassing sign was actually right in front of the house?
It might. I mean, it would change the facts somewhat, but it's still not enough. It's the state's position you need to do more if you're going to categorically prohibit people from knocking on your door and approaching your residence. Deputy Klukas did...
Not people. People who aren't invited.
People who aren't invited.
The public.
The public.
Other than invitees. What does a gate do that a sign doesn't do within the context of constitutional law?
Sure. I mean, a closed gate would maybe signal to law enforcement that that's telling you more explicitly than a sign posted on a utility pole that you're not invited.
What if someone were to say you're not invited without a gate? Is that enough?
That's what Deputy Klukas was intending to see when he approached the home. He didn't even get as far as the front door to know whether or not he was invited. He didn't even...
Well, let's assume there was someone standing there and said, no trespassing. Is that enough?
I mean, you have to look at all...
How is it different from a sign, I guess is what I'm getting... It seems obvious to me it would be enough to tell law enforcement, you're not welcome on my property, or to generally say, no one's welcome on my property unless they're invited. I'm wondering why a no trespassing sign... What's the purpose of a no trespassing sign, if not to tell uninvitees not to enter?
Again, maybe it's, you know, don't hunt on my land, don't stray from the path, you know, be careful of my drive when you approach. It didn't say no trespassing, keep out, never approach.
There's certainly no signs that say no hunting.
Correct.
But there are also signs that say no trespassing. Those are different messages.
And the state's position is that the implied license that Deputy Klukas used, I mean, he stayed within the scope of that.
But isn't
appellant
the issue
had
whether or not there is an implied license, given the circumstances.
Correct.
And I think the other side has conceded. If there was an implied license, they have no case.
Sure. I mean, Deputy Klukas got there so quickly, stayed on the main road, you know, didn't deter or exceed the scope of any of that license requirement. State doesn't believe there's any argument that when sitting in his driveway, passed out in his vehicle, that this one sign that Deputy Klukas didn't even observe that is sitting well before the tree line is prohibited of him from
but
even...
You keep saying well before the tree line, but we don't know whether the property line is on the tree line or somewhere else.
That is true. The analysis then changes that sign cannot be deemed in a protected area, even if it is his, unclear from the record,
well, can't
his
we assume
property.
Can't I assume that there's a sign... doesn't an ordinary person assume if there's a sign that says no trespassing, that from that point forward is the property of the person who is restricting access by the sign?
Well, it's in an open field. It's affixed to a public utility pole. I'm not sure what a reasonable, objectively reasonable person would say.
When you say public utility pole?
Well, I guess, again, it's not in the record, but it's clearly a utility pole that has, you know, electric wires.
Right,
on
but
the
when
top.
You're in a rural area, utility poles frequently go through by easement private property.
Sure.
So that doesn't tell us anything, does it? I mean, it doesn't tell us that the location of the pole was on public property.
Sure. And
you seem to be arguing, I think, that, you know, if the sign were, you know, closer, like if you got past the trees, there's where they're parking and there's a sign there, that might do it. Or are you taking the position that a no trespassing sign is never alone enough to keep out uninvited guests?
I think that if that's the court's ruling today, it would certainly be difficult to advise law enforcement on how to stay within the parameters of the Fourth Amendment if one sign categorically prohibits them from approaching. However, in this case, yeah, given the fact that the trespassing sign is quite some distance from curtilage and Deputy Klukas stayed within the scope of his license to approach,
I guess I don't understand why it matters how far it is away from the curtilage. I mean, if a person has a 2-acre lot or a 50-acre lot, that person would seem to, whoever the owner would seem to have the right to exclude any, the public generally, regardless of the size of the lot.
I just think when you're looking at an objectively reasonable person standard, that sign, it's difficult to say that alone is enough to prohibit entry. And so it should be unambiguous. It should just be obvious that you shouldn't approach.
So what would the sign say to make it unambiguous?
I'm saying that a sign alone isn't enough.
No matter what's on the sign?
That's the state's position.
What's the reasoning of the courts across the country that have taken that position, and why should this court be persuaded to follow that course?
The cases that the state's read have just identified that this implied license is part of practice and part of history, and approaching and knocking on doors by all of those people I listed, mail carriers, surveyors, you know, utility workers, law enforcement can use that right just as the public can.
But don't the cases kind of reason that, well, people ignore no trespassing signs. People don't, you see a no trespassing sign. I don't really take that to mean that I can't go up there even though I don't know this person and I'm uninvited. Isn't that what the cases reason?
They've said that, yes.
So they basically said a no trespassing sign doesn't mean no trespassing.
I suppose so. I suppose if you got to the door, and if had Deputy Klukas made his way to the door, he wasn't able to. The appellant was located prior to the entrance to the door. You know, the appellant cannot answer the door.
So does that mean then, like, if people put up these no solicitation signs, solicitors are welcome to ignore them, knock on the door, try to sell me encyclopedias, if that happens anymore?
Right. It's the difficulty of enforcing the single sign. And, yeah, I'm not sure if people still knock on doors for when there is no soliciting signs.
Can you put a fine point on it by telling us what would be the rule of law that we adopt if we were to affirm on the state's position?
That holding that this a single no trespassing sign tacked to a utility pole prohibits any entry to a property is an absurd result, and that a homeowner must do more if they want to revoke the public's implied license that is a natural right.
Natural right of the public to go onto someone else's property?
Or a right that's been recognized in law.
How does any person have a right to come on private property without invitation?
I mean, State Jardines, U.S. v. Jardines, recognizes that implicit license to knock and talk, and the state argues that this driveway that appellant was located in was impliedly open.
No, but we didn't have a no trespass sign in State Jardines.
Correct.
I mean, all these cases where you're talking about implied, there aren't restrictions saying you can't come on my property, and I think we'd all agree, absent any sort of restriction on entrance to private property, it's impliedly open by the normal means, driveway, sidewalk, front porch. But what happens when you have the no trespass sign? Is it still impliedly open to any stranger who wants to approach the house?
Your Honor, my time is up, and I would state that in this case, it's just not enough, and it's too ambiguous.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel for Appellant, any rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor.
I want to clarify for the court that appellant isn't asking the court to make a bright line rule that a single no trespassing sign is sufficient to strip law enforcement of that right to impliedly come onto someone's property in every case. It's looking at this case in particular, how appellant has demonstrated the demarcation of their property, how they have signaled to the public. In this case, we do see in the record that there are letterboxes that aren't right up next to appellant's house. Even the mail carrier, who, frankly, I would argue is an invited guest, even they don't come all the way to the house. I think, in fact, if the sign had been closer to the home, we're actually getting into a whole nother issue where once you get close enough to see the no trespassing sign, you can already see everything that appellant has tried to keep private at that point. I think it actually is more powerful that appellant has put that sign further out. Appellant has signaled to the public, turn around here. Don't progress down this line of trees into this clearing that I consider my private home, my curtilage.
Another way that the exhibits could be interpreted, however, is this sign is on the other side of the road from where your client lives, right, in an open field. Couldn't that no trespassing sign be interpreted as to apply to the area south of it in that open field? Not the part north of 7th Street Northwest where your client's residence is?
I suppose, Your Honor, I mean, that no trespassing sign was on the street in this case. I know Deputy Klukas didn't say he saw it, but it was on that portion of the street where the deputy was entering the house. There was also the...
But it's quite a ways before the actual house. You would acknowledge that.
Yes,
you can't,
Your Honor.
In fact, looking at the photos, you can't see the house from where you see the sign.
Right. And, Your Honor, I think that is actually more indication that appellant tried to take these steps before you could even see his home, see his curtilage. That was the line at which he is saying, this is my private property. Turn around. Do not come any further.
Can I ask you one other question? When I watched the deputy or the squad video, it looks like you go by two mailboxes on 7th Street Northwest after you heading west from Blue Jay.
Yes.
So that suggests there's somebody else who lives down that road.
I am not sure who that other mailbox belonged to, Your Honor. But again, the point is that these aren't right up against, you know, I have a home, for example, where my mail slot is built into my home. It's an older home. This is someone who has taken steps to not even have letter carriers driving all the way up to their house.
Do we know, does your client own any land, as Judge Bjorkman has pointed out, south of 7th? Or is his homestead all north of 7th?
I don't know, Your Honor. I know there are other properties sort of attached down there. But again, the property that appellant...
As I'm looking at the overhead picture, it looks like 7th goes past your client's home and continues on?
Yes, I think the tricky thing is there's not... From my interpretation and looking at it with appellant, there's not necessarily this hard turnoff. I think even for appellant, there is ambiguity as to where the public roadway ends and his private property begins. But I think regardless, when we're looking specifically at Deputy Klukas's path, how he entered the home, he is driving from 7th Street, at some point enters private property. I know he claims he does not see the no trespassing sign, but there is one there. The record also bears out that there is a sign that says that the area is under video surveillance. I think Your Honor pointed out correctly that Jardines involves a case where there is no indication to law enforcement they would not be able to come up to the door. That's not the case here.
I understand the significance of the no trespassing sign. I don't understand the significance that your ascribing to the surveillance sign?
I think the surveillance sign, Your Honor, is just another indication that individuals are not welcome on the property. Typically, when we see those smile, you're on camera signs, it's either I'm watching you, I can see. That's not an inviting sign. That's not a...
An uninviting sign. I mean, it's just you're being watched. Don't do anything wrong. Don't break the law while you're on my property.
I would agree. If that was the sole sign, that's different than in conjunction with a no trespassing sign. I think when you have no trespassing and smile, you're on camera, then that don't do anything wrong is the trespass itself, because the property owner has said, you are not welcome on this property and I will see if you enter my property. There is a right to an implied license. Oh, I see my time has expired. May I finish?
It is. If you can wrap up in a sentence, you may.
Yes, Your Honor. Even more deeply embedded in the fabric of our society is the right to private property, the right to be secure in your home, to have that property and not have members of the public intrude upon that. I ask the court reverse the findings of the district court and uphold that right to private property that's so fundamental to our society. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you to both counsel for your briefing and for your oral argument and for being prepared to address the extra issue that we put on your plate for today. The matter is submitted under advisement. We will issue our opinion within the statutory period. Thank you both. Have a good day.